now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, welcome on in to our News for Utah Plus app and our streaming show today. We appreciate you joining us. Want to hit off the top some of the topics we're going to be talking about today so you can know how long you want to stick around here. First of all, the protests happening in L.A. There's been a lot of war of words between California's governor and President Trump. Our own Governor Cox weighing in on that. Also going to hit dumb flags and dumb laws, right? Those are also some of the governor's comments around the pride flag situation happening here in Utah. Governor Cox is also not ruling out a potential special election when it comes to the HB 267. That's the collective bargaining referendum. So I'll get your thoughts on that. And then we've got some Utah representatives who are not fans of AI moratoriums in the big, beautiful bill. So we will hit on a bunch of those and more topics if we have time. Joining me today, Sarah Real and Aaron Ryder. Ladies, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Women talking politics. Sorry, that was weird, but that's what I'm going to do. Introduce yourselves really fast.
Go, Sarah.
I'm Sarah Real, and I serve on the state school board, the Utah State School Board, District 5, and I work at Salt Lake Community College as an adjunct professor of political science.
Perfect. And Aaron?
I am a local attorney here in town. Also was recently the Republican nominee for Salt Lake County Mayor, and happy to be here.
Yeah, we can't get out of this conversation without addressing
my views do not represent.
We should probably also say that neither of these people, their views don't represent their employers, right? They are speaking individually.
And I'm on,
but you also have a sparkliness.
Yes. Show 3 with my Utah Stars shirt, the WNBA team we used to have. So if Ryan Smith's watching, I think we should get another one.
Listen, Ryan, it was spoken here and thus it shall be, right?
Yes.
So that'll be fun. All right, producer Peter's here too. Hi, producer Peter.
Hi, everyone.
No
sorry.
Sparkly vest for you, just
no,
t-shirts.
No sparkly vest. I'm sorry to harsh the women talking politics vibe. there is a real threat. You hear a man's opinion at any time here.
Yes. Please mansplain anything
listen,
to us.
Listen,
we would love to
I wait
it.
For my moments.
No, we will bring you in for sure. All right, let's dive right in. The protests happening in LA are bringing up a lot of conversations around what is legal, what is constitutional when it comes to federalizing troops. President Trump obviously sending troops to LA to help with some of the protests there and protests that have gotten out of control. Our governor also weighing in and basically defending President Trump in his actions to send troops to LA. Let's take a listen to what our governor said, and then I'll have you guys react to that.
I do think it is legal for the president to do that, whether it's wise or not. When things get out of control, somebody has to stop it. And so I'm grateful that we have a president who's willing to act to help stop that.
So, Sarah, what do you think? Wise decision? Was it a little... What do you think about it? What is the decision
mean to
you?
Was it a wise decision?
Was it a wise decision?
I really want to hear you answer that question.
I think when he said wise in that clip, it wasn't a wise decision. I think that he also is thinking what I'm thinking, which is that although it is legal, and as he said, that the president is allowed to do that, this rarely happens. Mm-hmm. And it goes completely contrary to the state's rights. So the president would get on the phone with the governor and say, do you need me to call in the National Guard? Do you need to declare an emergency? And then the federal government responds. So anything that that the president is doing right now is basically to just prove that Governor Gavin Newsom is incompetent and things are so bad. It's amplifying this rhetoric. It's causing chaos. Governor Newsom said to President Trump, no, we're good. We have it under control. We have troops. We're handling this significantly. And when the president does something like this, it's bad for precedent and it's not a wise decision, in my opinion. I think Governor Herbert recently was quoted saying similar to what my thoughts are as well. It takes away these states' rights.
Aaron, weigh in on that. I mean, first of all, you've got the states' rights issue, but also, is there any justification for sending in troops? Is it okay when the state didn't ask for it?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's clearly a fight going on between President Trump and Governor Gavin Newsom.
It's almost as good as the Elon fight. I don't know which bromance is better. But.
Well, I don't think there's a bromance here at all. But, I mean, Gavin Newsom is clearly positioning himself for 2028. Donald Trump sees this. I don't know that Donald Trump cares about 2028. But Gavin Newsom is a political foil for everything that Donald Trump is trying to do. And so this maybe in some ways was an easy way for Trump to come in and say, well, we're going to take care of it for you and do it for you. Now, if I'm looking for a justification for this, for a, you know, was it wise kind of statement, the only thing I can really think of is that California doesn't really have a terrific track record when it comes to dealing with crises in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. particularly. Like, the mayor of Los Angeles does not have a particularly great track record. We can look at the last year and see some pretty, like, serious consequences from the fires and all sorts of things where the mayor did not handle that well. And when it comes to, you know, immigration is a massive part of the president's agenda. When it comes to something like immigration, if suddenly you're having riots and you're having all sorts of things happening in LA that are dealing with a huge portion of the president's agenda, I can see a scenario where the president says, I don't trust California, I don't trust Gavin Newsom or the mayor of Los Angeles to deal with this. So you know what? We're just going to take care of it because we can't allow this to continue.
Do you think he would have brought in those troops if this had happened in a Republican-led state?
Probably not. I mean, we can be honest about that. Probably not. But again, you know, like if this had happened in Salt Lake City, for example, Salt Lake City is not Los Angeles. Like, we have a very different track record of things than Los Angeles. So again, you know, do you trust the mayor of Los Angeles to handle a crisis? I don't know that anybody really does right now. I don't know.
But mayor of Los Angeles, that is very high on the list of jobs I'd never want. but also, if you want to push the message that all of your crackdowns on illegal immigration and a lot of things and all these ICE raids, if you want to push the message that you're doing the right thing, you amplify the protests as being awful. See, look what I'm doing to help you. So I think it's a lot of political
And I do think that's fair. I mean, I have a friend, just anecdotally, I have a friend who lives in a suburb of LA, and she had no idea these were even happening. Mm-hmm. So
interesting. No. So you brought this up a little bit, Aaron, when it comes to Gavin Newsom positioning himself for 2028. How does this factor in? Do voters remember this? Does this make it appear that Gavin Newsom is not capable to be president? I mean, what are your thoughts there?
Oh, I actually think that this is going the opposite route of what maybe President Trump is anticipating, because all it's doing is it's giving Gavin Newsom a platform to be everywhere all the time, to have massive amounts of news coverage, and to say, no, this is what we're doing. We're taking care of it. And look at how much you're messing it up. We had to take care of your troops when they came in. They didn't know what they were doing. So now we had to protect them and take away from our own local thing. I mean, Gavin Newsom's been changing the Democratic message for the last year anyway, as he's been positioning himself. And I mean, here's the thing with President Trump, right? Like, the ideas, the policies, the platform are things that people want, but the execution does not always live up to what it needs to be. Mm. And here, I think you had a similar situation where the execution of this didn't go very well. And so now you have these conflicts where you have, you know, are members of the National Guard now targets for protests because they're sent in from the president? It just gets really complicated really fast. And all I think it's doing is it's giving Gavin Newsom a platform to say, no, we had this handled, and look at what a mess the president of the United States is.
Yeah, but Sarah, we are seeing images come out of here. We're seeing burned cars. Sure. We're seeing vandalism. Yeah. We're seeing stuff like
the
Waymo
cars.
So, yeah, so, I mean, why shouldn't there be some sort of step in here when it comes to, you know, what Republicans are calling law and order?
Yeah, I think governors get to choose when they need that support. And I think we should let the states manage those kind of conflicts on their own until it really gets escalated to that point. Yes, there were cars being burned. I mean, in any protest, in any type of, you know, the right that we have to, you know, be upset at our government and protest, there are always bad folks in there that get mixed in and take advantage and light cars on fire or whatnot. There's also a lot of people that are really upset.
Hold on, Sarah. I'm going to push back on that a second. The First Amendment does not give people a right to go burn
cars. Not to burn cars,
right?
But in moments of when we are protesting, we do have a right to protest.
Yes, of course.
And when those protests happen, there are bad characters that show up that end up doing things and taking it too far.
Absolutely. But your
Which
comment,
is against the law, and they should be punished for that.
Yes, but your comment was the states should have the right to do that. But when do we reach that point? Where's the point at which you say, state, you are not handling this well enough, especially when it comes to something like immigration and ICE and a federal entity, federal issues that do actually involve the federal government? I think that's a legitimate question of when do you say, you're burning, you're destroying property, and we have a history of this, and it's not being taken care of, so sorry, but we just don't trust you.
Yeah, I think that there's no, like, point exactly, because it's up to the leader of the state, the governor, to make that decision of
so
when they feel like they can't
handle it. So the president should never have that.
I think that the state should be able to handle it themselves first. And if they can't, then the federal government can step in. Yeah.
Well, and if I think I could add to this for just a moment, another clip of the governor's that we talked about possibly playing for this segment is a little earlier in that comment. He clarifies that his stance is that if he had his way, this power that the president has would be much more limited. He doesn't really like the current configuration of our laws when it comes to when the president can federalize the National Guard and take this action. But in the situation, operating with rules he doesn't necessarily agree with, he is happy with what the president's doing.
Right.
So I think there's kind of this tension where I think the state's rights question, right, is going to play out over the course of this lawsuit. And it's going to be, you know, does Trump have the right to do this? And he ultimately does. But do we like that?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's where precedent. Like I'm really going. I'm very much a states rights person. But if you're looking for justification as to was this wise, I think that's where this becomes interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, there will be more to talk about on this topic for sure. Let's move to some other comments Governor Cox made this week. And it's the soundbite heard around the state. Dumb flags and dumb laws. Let's take a listen. He's talking about, let's just set up that he's talking about pride flags that were created by Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City put a sago lily on some pride flags and transgender flags and Juneteenth flags after the state banned them from government property. So Governor Cox was asked to react to their move on that.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I feel bad for the Japanese Americans. I feel bad for the Polynesian Americans. I mean, who are we leaving out here, Robert? I'm sure they feel great that they got around this dumb law and they did it with dumb flags.
What do you think?
It's just the whole thing's dumb.
He goes on to say, quote, "We are living in the dumbest timeline."
I know,
right?
That was my favorite quote.
I don't disagree with him about it being a dumb law.
And a dumb timeline.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And it was a dumb react. I mean, everything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have three things that I want to say about this. The first one is something that Ali Vallarta always says on CityCast Salt Lake, which is that flags are political. They're political. They're going to be political. When we landed on the moon, we didn't like wave and take a picture. We put our flag on the moon, right? Mm-hmm. Flags have always been political. That's why we have flags, from sports to countries to war, whatever it is, right? But the thing is about rainbow flags, and I've said this before in my state board meetings, I am gay, and rainbows are really not part of my brand. I'm not a big rainbow person. Mm. And so it's really always been like, they're fine, you know, there's a reason for them. And the reason for them, we wouldn't need rainbow flags or trans flags if people treated queer people with respect and didn't continuously make laws that were, pushing back against them, pushing them into, to lead to suicide and telling them that they're wrong and awful and all these things, right? We have rainbow flags. We have pride flags because a teacher with a pride flag at their desk, which they're no longer allowed to do, tells a student, a queer student, that they are safe there. Mm-hmm. And that is why we have those flags. It's to show that your neighbor that has it, I'm in a safe space. And we wouldn't need those flags if people just treated queer people with respect, right?
Yeah, I want to stop you before you make your other points because I want to kind of linger on that point a little bit. The argument from the other side is that, to your point, political flags should not be coming from the government, right? The speech of the government should not be political, hence why they were banned.
Right. And to that I say, like, I just think that we wouldn't even be having this argument if we just accepted and loved the LGBTQ community. We wouldn't need to have safe, like, flags to show that they're going to be safe here or that they're supported. And so going back to, like the government doing this, I just kind of think if we're making laws that municipalities are, going at them with this move to make their own flags. And if they're having to do that, that's when I again go back to, I think he's right. It's a dumb law. This is bad governing. We shouldn't be governing this way, where in turn these municipalities are having to respond in this way.
Right. Aaron, let me ask you this, though. The governor is getting criticism because he could have vetoed the dumb law, and he didn't. He didn't sign it. He just let it become law without his signature. So what does that say? What do you make of the criticisms of Governor Cox that he should have vetoed the law if he thought it was so dumb?
I mean, I think that I think it's likely that the legislature probably would have overridden the veto anyway and found a way to pass it regardless. And maybe Governor Cox knew that and just thought, You know, I mean, we've been here once before, right? We were here, what, 4 years ago with the transgender sports bill, which the governor did veto initially. And he vetoed it on a procedural foot and said, look, like, we have kids that this impacts. Let's, you know, the end result is not necessarily bad, but let's find the right way to get there. And I like that approach about Governor Cox. I think, you know, he's been beaten in battle by a lot of members of the Republican Party who don't agree with that approach. And I think we're seeing the effects of that in how he handled this bill. And again, you know, if he saw the writing on the wall and thought the legislature's going to do this anyway, then maybe he just went ahead with, you know, like,
yeah, there's a political calculation, and he's been open about that, that, you know, if they can just override it anyway, why am I going to spend my political capital?
Right.
Maybe they've threatened to, you know, get rid of all my other priorities if I sign this or if I veto this.
Right.
Thing,
it's retaliation. Right? So, like, everyone constantly, including Governor Cox, State Board of Education, municipalities, especially the city of Salt Lake, everyone lives in fear of retaliation. And I think that oftentimes we see that, you know, if I veto this bill or that bill, I'm not going to get my priorities. And that would be a really hard decision to make. Is this a dumb law? Yes. Should I veto it? Probably. But if I do that, I'm going to cause more trouble and not get my whatever.
Well, and I think, too, you know, when you're in elected office, and Sarah, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, but, you know, you do have to pick your battles and you do have to decide what you're going to fight for in any given moment and what you're not going to fight for. And maybe Governor Cox looked at this and said, I'm not going to be able to stop this bill from passing, but there are other things that I can do to help the LGBTQ community, because I think that he has been pretty open about the fact that he wants to support members of the LGBTQ community in Utah and that they should have a place here and should feel loved and welcomed here. And there are a lot of Republicans who feel that way. Mm-hmm. And so we're dealing with difficult issues and difficult questions brought up on both sides about this. And, you know, so, yeah, he's looking at this and saying now it's just evolving into an issue where we're just sort of slapping each other on the face. And, OK, well, if you're going to pass a dumb law, then I'm going to, you know, we're going to go create flags and get around your dumb bill. And it just takes focus away from how could we really be supporting this community in a more meaningful way? Like, what are the things we could be doing instead of wasting time passing laws and resolutions that just don't actually really accomplish anything.
That cities then have to react to.
And so he just didn't declare Pride Month for the first time in his being governor. It was the first June that he decided not to declare Pride Month. He declared it like Building Bridges Day or something. I don't remember, but I'm
going to chime in and say last year he did something similar.
Yeah, I was going to.
Okay, so second year.
Yeah, so that was.
Fact check Peter, though. Thank you.
Well, and some to make a point of this, I think when you look at that in proximity to him not declaring a Pride Month, is there a question of if Cox is kind of softening on these issues, right? He's not willing to make as much of a stink about LGBTQ issues when you see he's not vetoing this bill and he's not declaring a Pride Month. But then another thing I kind of wanted to throw out here is the extent to which this, I've seen it said that this is kind of a lose-lose for the governor, right? Because this comment and this issue, right? Calling the flags dumb is going to make, you know, his allies on the left mad. Mm-hmm. And calling the bill dumb, that's not going to earn him any friends on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if there's an extent to which he just doesn't want to touch this.
Yeah. And I would love it if government left the entire LGBTQ community alone for just even a year. Like, stop making laws for a small marginalized population. Stop trying to make it all of the talking points for the Republican Party is about trans folks. It's so frustrating. It's such a small population. And truly, regardless if you're supportive of the community and trans folks, it's just bad governing. You're making laws for a small segment of the population that are so unnecessary. And it's just completely frustrating that I get he wants to just leave it alone. I'd love it if the government left it alone.
Before I move on from this topic, you said you had three total points. Did you hit them all
hit
or
them
did
all.
I cut you off?
I hit them
okay,
all.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I did.
Well, we appreciate both of your thoughts on that. Okay, let's move to another comment that Governor Cox made. I asked him this specifically. The anti-collective bargaining referendum, this has been, you know, they gathered enough signatures to get on the groups, public labor unions who want to be able to collectively bargain with the government, right, who employs them. The legislature banned that this last session. They gathered enough signatures to try to get this on the ballot to repeal the law. Now Governor Cox is saying it is not off the table for him to call a special election this November in order to have Utahns weigh in on this issue. I want you guys to run through the pros and cons of whether we have that in a 2025 session or a 2026 session. I mean, obviously there are some political science issues here at play with who turns out in 25 versus 26. So who does that benefit?
Question.
And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's the big question. If you do it in 2025, turnout is lower in a municipal year. That's what we're are.
And who does that benefit?
Well, it likely means the referendum fails, that you don't get enough people voting to, you know,
so that would benefit the side of the legislature who wants to keep the law in place.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So the law would likely stand. If they did in 2026, you're going to have higher voter turnout. And maybe the law, you know, maybe the referendum passes, maybe it doesn't. But still, you're going to have higher turnout in 2026. The one thing about 2026, though, is that it's farther away from 2025, where we just had this signature gathering. The law just passed and you have all these people who are mad about it. Voters' memories are short, and you get to 2026, November of 2026, a lot of people just may not care anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, either way, it's an uphill
battle. You also have two other ballot measures on the ballot already in 2026. You've got two constitutional amendments already that are, one's controversial, dealing with initiatives and raising the threshold for passing initiatives dealing with taxes. So you don't, the legislature wouldn't want to lose on that issue either. So that's probably factoring in.
2026 does give both sides time to raise money and organize, but I just forgot that Governor Cox had done that 2 years in a row. So it is short-term memory, and municipal elections just don't have great turnout,
They really don't.
What do you guys think happens here, though? What should the governor do?
I think that if he does choose to call a special session and put
special
it on the ballot.
Election.
Well, to put it on the ballot for this November. It's
right.
A special election.
Special election. Yes.
Then he will, that to me says, we don't want this to pass. And if it is kept on 2026, it is a, hey, maybe we should reconsider a lot of things about this law and we are going to leave it up to the voters. Because the governor has come out and said he did not like how this whole thing went down. He did not like how the bill was in the end. So it's, you know, for me, I wonder if he's going to say, let's just let the voters decide in the time and the opportunity that we had set them, had presented for them originally.
And there's always a chance the legislature steps in the meantime and changes the law, right? Mm-hmm. And they could get to a point where they tailor it, you know, and tweak it and change it. We know that there will be a special session come August, September of this year, right? So a lot of things still at play. Aaron, any other thoughts on that topic before I hit our last one here? Mm-hmm. No, you're good.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see what happens with that. Okay, finally here, AI is in the big, beautiful bill. And the big, beautiful bill, of course, the spending package that Congress is trying to pass, it's still sitting in the Senate. We're seeing a lot of pieces around that. But one of the provisions that Utah's state leaders do not like is this provision that puts a moratorium on AI regulations. Utah passed some AI regulations in the last legislative session to be able to sort of have a lab where we, you know, a policy think tank, if you will, where we make sure these regulations are protecting consumers, but also allowing for innovation and technology. Aaron, should we pull this thing out? Is it done or?
Yeah, this is a really concerning part of the big, beautiful bill. And there are a lot of Republicans who are actually pushing back on this, not just at the federal level, but also, like you said, we're seeing that at the state level as well. I mean, even Margaret Bussey, our director of commerce here in the state, went back to the White House recently to talk about this because commerce does a lot of the AI policy, or they're starting to, and there's a lot of concern. The thing with AI is that it changes like on a daily basis. It changes so fast. Mm-hmm. And this provision would prevent states from touching AI for 10 years. I mean, that's not a tomorrow thing. That's 10 years, an entire decade. And an entire decade, we could be living in a Mission Impossible environment where, like, AI is, you know, trying to destroy
100%.
Us.
100%. Yes.
Right?
There will be no jobs left.
I think to offer a point of comparison, Representative Doug Fiafia, who authored the open letter that Utah representatives signed to our senators opposing this provision, gave the comparison that 10 years ago, we had the iPhone 6 and Alexa had just come out. No one had heard of it.
Right.
To give a sense of how long that is in technology terms.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a huge, huge time frame. And so it's weird that you would have a provision in this bill that says that states cannot even touch this for fully 10 years. So I think there is legitimate concern. And I frankly expect to see this provision change.
Sarah, why do you think that Congress wanted this in the first place?
Why do they want the entire bill is trash for me. There are some good things. I think we do need to cut government spending. I think that we need to reevaluate a lot of things. There are a few good things in there, like with the tips, right? Like you can't get taxed on your tips, like all of those. Those are great. But this bill is a cluster. It is a big pile of mess. It is going to increase our deficit. It is helping the rich get richer. And for me, like the AI is one piece of 10,000 that I see where we're taking away benefits for our population that needs them the most. SNAP, CHIP, Medicaid, feeding kids, healthy food. Like the list is so long that for me, the AI part is just ridiculous because of what I agree with everyone completely about the technology moving. It's a bad move. But overall, this bill is just a pile of junk. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, and maybe Aaron, you have some great thoughts about it, but I really wonder how many people in Congress are looking at this bill and saying, this is a really good idea. I'm really happy how this ended up. Or if they're saying, I'm living in fear of what the president will do if I vote against it. And this is, short-term political gain. That's all this bill is. It's to say that he did it. And how many are really actually happy with where it's at? Because I think that all of them that go on their campaigns and say, we want to cut the deficit, they see this major add to the deficit, doesn't really help the populations that are in a lot of their states and a lot of Trump winning counties. Why would they vote that yes for this, right? So I don't know.
Let me give you the last 20 seconds to just, is it trash? Is it trash like Sarah say?
It's certainly problematic. There's no question about it. When you have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene come out and saying, well, if I had read this, then I may have voted differently. I think that says something. But at the same time, I know people like Representative Blake Moore have talked about, look, we need to preserve some of the tax cuts that we had in Trump's first term. And we can't do that without this bill. So is it imperfect? You pass it and you fix the imperfections later on? Or do you risk completely torpedoing President Trump's entire agenda, especially with midterms just looming on the horizon?
I would love the latter.
We will leave it there. Dumb bills and dumb laws. That's the theme of today. Thank you all for being with us. Producer Peter, we appreciate your insights as always. And we will see you on our next session here on our News for Utah Plus app. See you later.
Thanks for joining us, folks.